Studio, Snoop Dogg and D.I. Guess who's back? Steve. Still doing that shit, Andre?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Check me out.
It's still Dre Day, A.K. Though I've grown a lot, can't keep it home a lot. Cause when I frequent the spots that I'm known to rock, you hear the bass from the truck when I'm on the block. Ladies, they pay homage, but haters say Dre fell off. How? My last album was The Chronic. They wanna know if he still got it. They say rap's changed, they wanna know how I feel about
it. If you ain't up on pace,
Dr. Dre is the name, I'm ahead of my gang. Still puffing my leaf, still with the beats. Still not loving police. Still rock my khakis with a cuff and a crease. Still got love for the streets, reppin' 213. Still the beats bang, still doing my thing. Since I left, ain't too much change.
Still, I'm representing for the gangsters all across the world.
Still. Dale, that's Dre featuring Snoop Dogg, and this is Cindy Gomez Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez Shemp.
And we have the Lizard in the studio too.
Hello.
And today you're listening to KPPP LPFM, broadcasting online through Live 365. Soon you'll be able to find us on your radio dial at 88.1 FM. And still, we're talking about Black Lives Matter.
That's because Black lives still matter.
Well, Black lives have not been given the matter that they deserve in this country, and that's why the Black Lives Matter movement has been clamoring Black Lives Matter, because they should matter. We should care about this topic, and that's why we're still talking about it today. There's a lot of stuff to talk about that's been happening in the news. One of the things I wanted to mention right off the bat was Janelle Monáe, who was interrupted during a Today show on Friday. And there's been story after story of new killings by police of unarmed Black men in the news continuing every day. It's just astonishing how much we're seeing in the news about this.
Yes, and it's really good that it's in the news. It's very terrifying that this is happening, but it's very good that it's being covered by social networks to the point where news stations actually have to cover it.
Yes, but it's not being covered everywhere, and it's the reason why we still have to talk about it. It's the reason why we still have to bring it up.
That's for sure.
In last show, we had a black and white comparison. That was what we were talking about. And we talked about income inequality and the gap in education, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, housing and unemployment and wealth, etc., etc., etc.
And prison populations and crime.
And the shooting of unarmed Black men.
Yes.
The killing by police. It's a terrible situation that we have to contend with. I sort of wanted to start off by reading this post about unintended racism, which I really liked, because we'll talk about all other forms of unintended racism and how they apply to our community and what's facing people of color. This says, you know what's worse than being an unashamed racist? I'm talking KKK member, Nazi, those people. Being unintentional racists. Because everyone knows the moron in the KKK is a racist.
Or is an intentional racist.
Right. We can avoid being like him by not joining the KKK, lynching people, and smiling at Black people everywhere. We don't need to be told Hitler was a racist. He made it obvious when he murdered millions of Jews for being Jews. What's bad is when we casually assume one Black guy and another Black guy know each other. They have to, right? Because they're Black. Like, I know every Hispanic person on the planet. We communicate through our skin tones. Duh. Or if we end up in a Starbucks with two Black guys and feel nervous when yesterday we were too busy with our smartphones to pay attention to the loud white frat boys. We could distract ourselves when said smartphone, but it's with said smartphone, but it seems safer in our pocket. Or that time a presidential candidate called all Mexicans murderers and rapists and is somehow still a viable candidate. Or the time when we had a Black president and immediately he was accused of being from Kenya, and then led a Canadian run in the next campaign. Little things that we don't seem to notice. That's bad, because it means that the racism is so buried deep inside that it's become natural and accepted. It's a lot easier to deal with Hitler than it is to deal with our own prejudice. And, you know, I think that it is very hard to recognize the subtle ways in which racism is alive and well all around us.
And it takes work for white people to really look at it. That post described a method of looking at it. We've talked about implicit, explicit bias. There's tests you can take to see the racial bias that you have been imprinted with as a white person. And you need to start recognizing that. So I would like to hear more methods, but they all lead to the same thing. White people need to stop. They need to review. They need to look backwards. They need to look forward. They need to look at themselves right now, and that's how they're going to change.
Mm-hmm.
I really think we need to start seeing other people in the now instead of the big bad of Hitler like a bunch of years ago. Instead of always pointing out, well, this guy's Hitler, comparing Obama to Hitler, or thinking of Hitler as this big evil, you got to remind yourself that Hitler was elected democratically in his country. People actually saw him as a great leader who helped out. He was admired, actually, mm-hmm. a lot before he started murdering millions of people. People looked up to them the same way people probably looked up to presidents of our past, too, who committed atrocities all across this country.
Right. See, we look at in hindsight and we say, oh, you know, George Washington had slaves. That was really bad. But he was a great president, wasn't he? I mean, aside from the slave thing, it was it was great.
No, he wasn't.
I mean,
or Jackson, President Jackson.
Well, right.
He's the first president of this country. And remember that Europeans totally killed all the native people on the eastern seaboard and then throughout this whole country.
The Indian Removal Act.
That's the genocide we should be talking about. We should be talking about Hitler, but we should also be talking about the genocide in this country.
Of indigenous people.
Pointing out everyone else's big bads and not looking at ourselves.
So, right.
So when we look at any presidents of that whole capitalistic machine, we do have to look at what it really was.
Mm-hmm. And some of the subtle things that we see in our community, for example, is we brought this up before. In fact, there was a spoof page about this news station that's being criticized in the media for their misleading. In fact, KVRR did a story that fact-checked the information put out by Valley News Live about a surge of immigrants coming into the community. Didn't they do two stories?
Yeah, they did two stories, and they called it false reporting, misleading reporting. They did not name Valley News Live. But that's who they're talking about, because that's where the information has been coming from, those of us who are watching. And that's why Valley Hate Live.
It was implied.
It was implied, yes.
Heavily implied.
Yeah.
It was implied that a local news station that did a story about a surge of immigrants, which was done by Valley News Live.
Exactly.
Had lied, basically. They had lied, and that this information was misleading and hurtful to the community.
Blaspheme.
There was a letter to the editor that was written by Barry Nelson, published in the High Plains Reader. I want to give the folks out at the HPR a shout out. You can go and read more of this letter over at hprone.com. And Barry said, and by the way, Barry's worked with refugees most of his career. He's a person that's worked with Lutheran Social Services, mm-hmm. and he really knows that community well, and he's been in the trenches, so to speak. But he didn't come out and say the news station's name either, but clearly he was referring to the misleading story about the surge in immigrants, which Valley News Live did a story on.
Yes, yeah.
So he basically said that this news station and their story, what they were doing was racist and hateful toward immigrants, and that they were subjecting those folks to hate. And so I wanted to update folks about that, because I think it's really important to find out in terms of what's going on with hateful messages out there in the world and fighting discrimination. This is an issue that is happening in our community. If you want to check out more about that story on hprone.com, you can also go on Facebook and look up Valley Hate Live, which is a Facebook page that has been created, a spoof page that is seeking to call this news station on the carpet for for what it deems as hateful, intolerant behavior by a news station. Media justice is being done out there by people in this community that are calling out for equal reporting and journalism, actual ethics in journalism.
Yes, and people are calling out, and the calling out like Barry did by writing a letter to the editor and exposing this, that needs to happen more. The station manager told him that he doesn't matter because he's not the constituent of the station. He's not the demographic that's listening. Barry's a community member.
But we are all consumers of media, and we do have a right to impart our message to the media under Article 19, right, of the United Nations
Human Rights Declaration that was passed back in the 1940s.
Exactly.
Declaration. And I can't
Declaration.
Talk. There we go. That's it. Thank you.
And it is the basis of our work as the People's Press Project, the nonprofit that we started that acquired this station, KPPPLPFM, which you are listening to right now.
Exactly.
If you just tuned in, and we are still talking about Black Lives Matter because it's an important topic. We want to hear what you guys think about today's topic, past topics, other things that you want to hear on this program, on our station. And what are your comments? What are your questions?
That's right. So why don't you give us a call to our message line at 701-566-0917. You can also tweet us at @media_PPP. And you can email us, Cindy@KPPPFM.com and Duke@KPPPFM.com.
Yes, that's correct. And another update I have on Black Lives Matter is the thing I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Janelle Monáe, who was cut off on Friday's Today show when she was giving a message to black folks and white folks about the Black Lives Matter movement. And this is what she was saying. She said, "God bless all the lives lost to police brutality." And then she added, "We want white America to know that we still stand, that we stand tall today. We want black America to know we stand tall today." She was saying, "We will not be silenced when they silenced her."
Cut her off.
They
irony.
Well, we've been researching what words you can and can't say on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And none of those words are ones that are banned. But yet she's cut off.
That seems like censorship.
It does.
Dystopian.
It was very, it was very disrespectful and dystopian and upsetting because she was singing a song that was speaking about Black Lives Matter. It was a tribute to the Black Lives Matter movement. And it says, "Say her name, say his name." They mentioned many of the people that have been killed by police since Michael Brown. And I think that it shows that this discussion about Black Lives Matter is still very important. We need to be talking about why these kinds of things are happening. And in other news, in the Bernie Sanders campaign, I don't know if you guys know about this, but he was tweeting. Actually, DeRay McKesson was tweeting to the Bernie Sanders campaign, that he had looked at the racial justice platform that was put out by Bernie Sanders following the disruption of the Black Lives Matter women in Seattle, Washington, which a lot of people in Bernie Sanders' camp criticized those women for. Mm. But you know, it was very successful because he put out a platform for racial justice right away. And now activists like DeRay McKesson, who has, as you guys probably know, I follow him on Twitter because, frankly, the media has been woefully inadequate at telling us what's happening in terms of police killing people of color, police harassing people of color, like happened in McKinney at the pool incident and mm-hmm. situations like that. They've been terrible at reporting the information. They're basically forced by social media to correct themselves, every 15 minutes because they'll put out information, many times false, misleading, that really tends to criminalize the victims right off the bat. And then guys like DeRay McKesson are tweeting all over the place. They live tweet, they broadcast video, they go to the protests, and they're doing what the mainstream media can't do, and can't keep up with.
And what they're doing too is that he's following Bernie and really seeing if he's putting his words where his mouth is, basically. And there needs to be updates because a politician could slip away real fast.
Well, do you remember that podcast that we did recently about police surveillance of activists?
Yes, yes, I do.
He's one of the people that they've begun to surveil. Homeland Security has been surveilling this journalist, this community journalist and activist that has been focused on the Black Lives Matter movement and on the killings of police, police killings of black people. DeRay McKesson.
And many black activists are being surveilled. And we're not talking about just a camera outside their house, someone sitting in a car. We're talking
Jonetta.
About everything they do, every electronic device they do that leaves any sort of footprint. They're compiling mm-hmm. private information, private things people do. We complain
they
that
they see them as a danger. Mm-hmm. Yes, how messed up is that? They see them as a danger? How?
And other countries see the United States has been warned for spying on other countries. We're now, spying on our
this.
Own people.
They let this idea sink in, okay? The Black Panthers were created by black people in response to the killing of their people indiscriminately and with police, you know, blessing of the KKK. The lynchings, the stalking, the violence that was visited, the burnings of churches, the bombings of churches, the killings of people by white supremacists, the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Black Panthers were created to respond to, right?
Yes, for their own protection.
And the government, our federal government, attacked that organization, killed people, framed them, put people in prison, okay? We're talking about people like Assata Shakur. We're talking about people that were put into jails and falsely accused, and through COINTELPRO, they disbanded the Black Panther movement. They've disbanded the Black Panthers, but the KKK is still around.
That's right. Running people for Congress.
And when they go and march somewhere,
they get protected.
The police protect them.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. They do. And when black people go out and march somewhere, because the police are killing them, the police come out and they shoot at journalists and they shoot at the black protesters, even when those people are members of the legislators, are people that are journalists or clergy.
Or professors or...
Or philosophers.
Philosophers.
Yeah, it's stunning if you think about it. If that doesn't tell you where we are in this country... I don't know.
And that's systemic racism. That's the racism that is in our system.
Mm-hmm.
You can't change that by plucking one officer out that did something and sticking someone else that you think is good in there. The system is still rotten.
And we have a whole bunch of horrible stories that have come out in the news. One that just turned my stomach, literally, was the story that happened this summer in May. Of a Chicago cop that punched an 8-month-old woman in the belly while she was holding her 1-year-old child, and then went into a racist tirade because
8 months old pregnant?
Eight months pregnant. She was 8 months pregnant. She was 8 months pregnant with this baby. She was forced into premature labor. Fortunately, she did not lose her child. But also, fortunately, there was surveillance cameras on the building.
Wow.
And the incident was caught on tape. So she was able to corroborate her story. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness for surveillance video, right?
And also access to it. Because once again, what's your access to the things that you're being filmed with in our communities? There's cameras everywhere. Some are private, some are public. Mm-hmm. Getting access to the video. Sometimes you hear about these things months after they happen. Or
even police
years.
Video.
Because they're not released to you.
Right, even police video.
Yeah, police are difficult to get.
We have a whole show that we did about whether or not body cameras, the pros and cons of body cameras and whether police should wear them. And also we did another show about whether police should be in the schools.
That's right.
We have all of those podcasts on our website at kpppfm.com if you want to check those out and share them with your friends. Tell us what you think. You can comment right there on the page, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They can comment actually with Facebook. So it posts to Facebook when you comment on the page.
Cool. And if you want to, you can also tweet us at @media_PPP, or you can leave us a message at 701-566-0917, or email me at cindy@kpppfm.com, or duke@kpppfm.com.
Good job.
Thank you.
Yay.
Yay. And you know what? That reminds me. Next, we're going to be sharing your little segment, Yay and Nay, while we take a break. What is this new segment about,
It's
Lizard?
About, well, recently there's been some new movies coming out, and they're mostly sequels. We've noticed this. And
yeah,
well,
what
me
is
and
up
Nemo,
about that?
We want to talk about sequels. Are they good or bad? You know, what's their purpose?
Cool. I want to hear this. Well, let's check it out. And when we get back, we'll be talking again about Black Lives Matter. We'll get into Dre, which was the opening song at the beginning. We were listening to some Dre and some Snoop Dogg, and we're going to be talking about the new movie Straight Out of Compton.
Oh, yeah.
And the beginnings with NWA and all of the musicians that came out from Dre's group. And after that, we'll also be mentioning the Oath Keepers. So you want to stay tuned for the second half of this podcast. But first, here's Lizard and Nemo with Yay and Nay.
This is the Lizard and Nemo with Yay or Nay. Today, I am Nay. And Nemo is Yay. Today we're talking about movies again. This time, sequels. Are they good or bad? Because we just heard about some very interesting sequels. Nemo, how about you start out?
Well, the reason that I heard about sequels before my sister was because I was paying attention to D23, which is basically a Disney event that was happening in Anaheim, California over the weekend. Yeah, so I was watching that, or at least for the stuff that I was watching it for. And so there they announced games related to Disney, as well as upcoming films by Disney, as well as Pixar, etc., etc., etc.
I saw a cool one called Moana, dude.
Oh yeah, that's been in the works for a while, and so we've only been seeing bits and pieces of concept art of scenery and potential voice actors that will be in the film.
Yeah.
Like, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
The Rock's gonna be in there?
Yes.
The Rock!
Yeah.
I'm so excited right now.
Yeah.
I didn't know The Rock was gonna be part of that movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was all over the Tumblr and everything.
He's gonna be a rock?
I don't know. I don't think so.
There was a snowman in another movie. There could be a rock.
You never know. But, that's not the point. He's gonna play a role in that film. I'm not sure what it is yet, but it will be a role. And, you know, it's really nice, especially for kids of color that are, you know, he's supposed to be Native Samoan, I think.
He's Native Samoan?
I think so, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, and so, and this is, you know, this film is represented by those groups of people.
I saw her, she has amazing hair, and I was like, that's my hair.
And then people also appreciate, you know, the character Moana's body type and how realistic it is.
Yeah,
to
a lot of Disney princesses have really
women.
Thin waists, you know.
Thin waist, oversized eyes, but it's part of the Disney style.
Yeah, but Moana has really great proportions, like in Lilo and Stitch, Nani had great proportions. I'm like, I could have those.
Right.
I do, you know, but better, in my opinion.
Right.
But I saw Moana, I was like, that's actually real proportions again. I like the idea that whenever women of color come into play, real proportions are more often played out, because both Nani and Moana are very dark-skinned, beautiful women with curly hair and brown eyes, and I'm all like, that's me on screen. I can relate, even though I'm supposed to not like Disney anymore. But screw that. I can watch cartoons. Anyway, talking about new sequels that have been coming up.
So yeah, so there was different like posters with either estimated release dates for example, Finding Dory, that's supposed to come out in
2016. I thought that was a joke. I thought Finding Dory was a joke Ellen made.
No, it was real.
It was a real movie.
I mean, she's funny, but that was real.
She's not that funny. No, I'm joking. don't come after me, Ellen.
No, of course not. But there was that, and I was aware of that for a while, but as far as the last time I heard, it was pushed back a little bit for the other films, which is okay, you know.
Talk about the other movies.
The other movies, at least that I am excited about in terms of sequels,
yes,
is The Incredibles 2.
Oh, we've been waiting for that forever.
Right, and I don't even remember how long ago it was playing, but I'm pretty sure I was like, it feels like I was in middle school when I watched it.
There's a new Toy Story 1 too.
And then there's going to be Toy Story 4.
And?
And the one that I'm not exactly so excited about, only because I thought that the first was enough, is Cars 3.
I like the Cars ones. No offense, I just love them.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's nice, and you know.
But tell us why sequels are good.
Sequels are good, mostly to fill in a gap in the plot, if there was one. Tie up some loose ends if there were any left over.
Mm-hmm.
Such as cliffhangers, and something that's, you know, implied like, oh, we don't know about this, but we're going to learn about it later. Which is why we have, like, this ending clip at the end.
Like what?
Like, for example, if you watched The Incredibles back when it came out, and you looked at the extra scenes that were in there, there is a short, an animated short, where the babysitter babysits Jack-Jack.
The baby! With the little pointy hair.
The little baby. And for the longest time throughout the film, it is believed that he does not have powers.
Yeah.
And when you watch a short, he does have powers, and the babysitter does her absolute best to take care of him before she surrenders him over to Syndrome.
Yeah.
The bad guy.
His dummy.
And we all wondered, how did he get there and how did he get the baby so easily? It's because she was so, like, frazzled and just frightened by the baby that she just did not care anymore and she wanted out.
I want out, man.
Right. And so, and then it also explained, for example, all the phone calls that she left on Helen's phone.
It's like, hey, hey, hey.
Yeah.
Like, the last one, yeah. She sounded desperate.
Right. It got more, like, frightened as it went on until she suddenly sounded totally at peace and relaxed. And I thought, that's really weird. And then, like, to be left with another babysitter, and it just got really weird.
Yeah. I liked the last scene because I was like, that baby has so many cool powers.
And then,
I heard from The Incredibles that every single person was supposed to represent who they were in the family. Like, the father is strong, and the mother has to be flexible, you know, deal with so many things.
That's
and,
right.
You know, teenager wants to be invisible, she's insecure, little boy's energetic, he's zipping around everywhere. The baby is like all these possibilities.
Right, potential.
Potential and personified. So exactly. I was like, that's perfect. I always wonder why they always seem to fit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So,
a lot of forethought.
And even though Jack-Jack fought his way out of Syndrome's hands when he was being kidnapped, and realized that, the parents still didn't know that he had powers. They hadn't seen any of that. They just knew he was being taken away.
Yeah, and it's a really good movie that you're like, I want to see what happens next.
Right.
I mean, it ties up loose ends, but it leaves such an open and interesting world, they're left wondering, right, what else could happen here.
And all you know is that, you know, at the very end of the film, they continue fighting crime, and it seems like it's allowed, you know, again, thanks
but not
to
like really
their
too
efforts.
Legally. I think that, you know, maybe the next movie could like talk about how should we really legalize things,
right? So
you know, how do the kids go when they grow up?
Right. There's like possibilities of a new plot line. Perhaps a group of people who are anti-hero, so to speak.
Maybe villains.
And
because you know villains, more villains.
And it's implied that Syndrome is dead, but who knows? Unless we get like total confirmation in plot that he's
maybe he's like all mangled.
Well,
dang, that's nasty imagery.
Well, when you've got like, you know, genres of the superhero genre like Batman, and then you get like the villain Two-Face and everything, it's not necessarily far-fetched, but
and then
of course you have to also think about when Robert Parr, his identity, Mr. Incredible, found all the dead at least one of the dead bodies of...
Oh, that was sad. You know, there's a lot of people who theorized... There's a lot of people on Tumblr who theorized, you know, all the people who died, you know. There must have been so many sad funerals for all those heroes who were dead and stuff.
Yeah, and then a lot of them probably had families that didn't know where they were, or their entire family is annihilated if they got together.
Yeah, like a lot of plot building that could happen in sequels. That's why they're awesome. Also, because I think every movie should have a sequel. I mean, it's...
Well, not like every movie. Not
no,
every
no, no,
movie.
No. I think every movie could have a sequel if it was played out perfectly. I think even if they don't need one, they should anyway, because, you know, if you make a really interesting world with interesting characters, it shouldn't be taboo to have, you know, another movie talking about those characters. I think sequels are bad when they only continue for the wrong reasons, like, you know, marketing or just to get more money from it, like Shrek.
Right.
Like My
but,
Name.
Like, here's the thing. I remember Shrek and, like, you know, it was a cool first movie. As a kid, it had some, like, you know, raunchy jokes here and there that if you were a kid, you weren't going to get right away. But if you were a doll, haha,
I did it. I was a smart child.
Right. So, you know, I was getting some of those jokes, too. But then, you know, it was heavily marketed. And at the time, it was cool. But then after that, it was more films. And it got a little crazy. Like, what was it now? The last one that we know was a Shrek 5? Shrek the Fifth or something?
I don't think there was that many. I think it went to 4.
I don't know. It's just really weird because I know for sure there was Shrek the Third, you know, as a play on of, you know, royalty and all that.
I remember not liking the movie as a child, like being like, this movie sucks.
Like Shrek 2 was like, okay, because now you gotta meet the parents. After you save the princess, right?
Yeah,
okay.
And then you save the princess. What about her backstory? Why was she locked in a tower? That doesn't make sense.
Right.
What about their relationship? Did it work out? Because they don't seem that well fit for each other. You can kind of work off of the first movie.
Right.
But, like My Name of the Day, sometimes sequels are just they're damages on the world. They're like a curse. You just don't need them. Like Cars. Like the Cars 2, I was like, I mean, I guess you can work off of the side character and adventure he goes on, but it wasn't like added on to the story. It's just a movie that you can get. It's like, this is another thing that happens in their lives. It could be interesting on its own. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Sequels are great for movies that have open-ended ends, or, you know, have a great world where you can build off of it or work off of some new characters,
but
sequels, like, Despicable Me. They're doing this third movie with the Minions.
Right.
And it's like they're marketing the Minions so much. This is a new Shrek. Like,
right.
Everything Shrek did when it was popular, the Minions are doing now. I'm like, it's like it's going over
again.
Yeah,
and so everyone is feeling this terrible nostalgia and...
of over-marketing a character.
Right. Especially people from our generation that remember the
Shrek marketing. How dare you stood where he once stood.
Yeah, those little jokes.
On the yogurt packets, on gummy bears,
and then,
on
like,
cereal,
and then
on
all the other, and then of course there's the ogre puns, like it's never ogre.
Oh my god, it's never ogre? That's a pun that happened, I remember.
Right, so yeah.
Sequels. Well, some people like them, some people don't. I think the new Toy Story sequel is going to be, I think it's going to be cool. They've done really well.
Based on what I've heard of the summary, it's supposed to be the love story between Woody and Bo Peep. And all we know is from the last film that we watched.
Bo Peep was gone.
And so, hopefully this will at least show, you know, that backstory behind Woody.
I don't know. I mean, I felt like it was a really good ending to the series. I'm like,
could they
work off of it more?
Of course, but then people want to know what happened to Bo Peep aside from the fact that she left.
But it was kind of like the one of, like a tiny I want to know. Like, I kind of want to know what happened, but I'm sure I'll live without it.
Right.
So making an entire movie about that small question, I'm like wondering if it can work.
Well, the thing is, it's not often that Pixar focuses on a, I suppose, highly romanticized love story. Because most of the time it's for, it's different types of love. Whether, like, for example, Up was between this old man who didn't have love for anyone, and then he grew compassion for this kid and a dog.
The first 5 minutes of Up were the most depressing I've ever felt when watching a kid's movie. I was like, oh, my heart, it just broke 5 times.
Yeah, but, like, we can't be rambling on for too long.
It seems so. Well, this is Nemo and the Lizard on Yay or Nay.
Wow.
Yeah.
They really broke it down, didn't they?
They did. Boy, I like listening to young people.
Thank you.
You know what, though? I don't know about the sequel thing. I feel like Some sequels just should not be made. What do you think?
Well, some should, some shouldn't. Sometimes I'm like, what happens next? But some are like, yep, I can end there. I can evaluate this movie and all the messages, the relationships. I'm fine. I got the message.
Sometimes too much marketing is overkill.
Yes.
And this is Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And you're listening to KPPPLPFM. Today we're talking about Black Lives Still Matter, because it's still a very important topic. And when we have a change, a significant change, where this doesn't need to be a topic that we have to address on a regular basis, maybe you'll hear less of it. But for now, you're going to hear a lot more about what's happening in terms of the Black Lives Matter movement and in the killing of black people in this country.
Yes, as long as the killing keeps on happening, as long as people aren't paying attention, black lives will continue to go on. They're not going to just stop because Bernie Sanders changed his platform.
Right. And people are still going to need to have these issues highlighted, and they're not highlighted enough in the media. And that's why we do it here on KPPPLPFM. We're broadcasting online through Live 365. Soon you'll be able to find us on your radio dial at 88.1 FM. And I wanted to get back to today's topic. This is a story that kind of unnerves me. I don't know how I feel about this, because the Oath Keepers, we talked about them before. They're these armed ex-military dudes. And they
marched on Ferguson just last week.
Yeah, they did. And
with loaded guns.
Loaded guns. They were approached because they have the right to carry firearms out in the open in Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Open carry.
Open carry, and they have their permits to do these things. But, you know, the difference between the way that black people are treated who have guns.
Well, you just mentioned the Black Panthers.
Right.
They were carrying guns, open carry laws in California, and they got killed because they were carrying guns. They were saw as a threat because they were carrying weapons, even though it was their legal right.
Right. It's very different when black people carry guns than when white people open carry guns.
And they just make it really obvious. The Oath Keepers, it was like the most perfect descriptor of this situation. It's like a personified, really.
It is. And the other thing is that it scares me what the Oath Keepers are going to do. In some ways, it terrifies me to think about what the outcomes could be. What they're doing is they're going to arm black Ferguson protesters with AR-15s and do a protest march with them.
No way.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
They've announced this, and it's pretty scary. I don't know what other people think about it. I've seen people discussing it online. Some people think it's great. Some people think it's insane. Obviously, we want to hear what you think.
Oh, the police have already said, you're doing no good here. You're making things more complicated. For them to do a march, are they going to stick all the black people out in front and they'll be behind them? That is just, it's going to enrage those police officers. It's going to lead to black people getting killed.
But you know, there's also been groups of armed black people who are doing open carry protests across the country. They're not getting a lot of news, but I've seen them. Have you guys seen any of those stories?
No. Actually, no.
No, I haven't either.
I've seen these stories, and they're marching out where police are, and they're, you know, marching and
asserting their right to
bear arms.
Bear arms. And those laws just changed here in North Dakota.
They did.
You know, and I haven't seen a lot of people walking down Broadway with an AR-15 strapped to them, but they can.
Oh, they definitely can. There's a lot of people that open carry. I mean, they have concealed permits too. And the access to people that carry guns to public places is becoming more widespread. But most black people are still seen as a threat, even when what they're killed for carrying as seen as a weapon is sometimes a phone, a wallet, or just them reaching for their waistband.
Yeah.
So it's that's the part that scares me. I'm not sure what danger could befall black people, but you know, black people are always in danger. a lot of people think that this is a way for police to see that black people can be armed and will be protected by people like the Oath Keepers. They came out in a story that was in the freethoughtproject.com. And by the way, we'll put up links on kpppfm.com along with this podcast, so you can find links to the different articles that we've been referring to in our show.
Yeah, we like to source the things. And too, if we miss something, you can always comment on the podcast right at the bottom, or send us an email and let us know what you think.
Yeah, you can send me an email at cindy@kpppfm.com, or you can email duke@kpppfm.com, or you can leave us a message at 701-566-0917, or you can tweet us at @media_PPP. You can also follow us online at the People's Press Project.
Yes.
On Facebook, and you can find us on the web as well at thepeoplespressproject.org.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're talking about Black lives still mattering right now, and in this article that's in the Free Thought Project about these Oath Keepers, here are some of the things that they say. First of all, they say that they have people of all races on their security team. They have been accused of being mostly white, but they say they are not only white. They have people of all races on their team, that they're not racist, and that they would not tolerate anyone who is, and they would kick them out of their organization if they found one to be racist.
I don't know about that.
This is what they said. I'm just going to tell you what they said.
Okay.
And here's something else they said. They said that Chief John Belmar of the St. Louis Police Department has been breaking the law in Missouri, threatening to disarm people and violating their rights because they have been quoting a statute of the state, which is statute 44.101.1, which they say gives them the right to carry arms and that they cannot be disarmed during a state of emergency, which, as you know, Missouri declared, St. Ferguson declared a state of emergency mm-hmm. recently mm-hmm. following the shooting of another black man, a friend of Michael Brown's. And this is during the month of the anniversary, 1 year anniversary of the killing of Michael Brown.
It's just too sad.
Yeah, all this stuff is going on.
And the state of emergency probably wasn't called to protect all the black people who might also get shot. It was probably mm-hmm. to protect all the white people who think they're going to riot.
That's
which
right.
they should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they call martial law for that. But when white people riot after a big game, you don't see them calling martial law.
They burn cars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's happened very close to here. It happened in Minneapolis
several
times.
They destroy property. They, yeah. And when that happens, it's misled youth or angry fans protest in the streets. But when black people are protesting, it's called rioting.
That's right.
And they're called criminals.
And they call a state of emergency and bring in the military.
Violent rioting.
Mm-hmm. So these folks claim that they're going to be there to uphold the Constitution, that they took an oath to the Constitution. Most of them, again, are military, ex-military. I should remind folks that many of ex-military that return to this country go into the police department.
Not mm-hmm. very reassuring at all.
But I should remind you of that because, that's one of the things that is hard for me when I listen to the Oath Keepers as a group, just the connection to the military and the police, which is, you know, it's been very racist historically.
Yeah, we covered much of this in our earlier podcast too.
Mm-hmm. Now, he says that there's another myth, and that myth is they're going out to Ferguson to hurt people, and that's the opposite of what they're there for. He said they're there to guard the lives of African American people, Asian people, white people, Korean people, Chinese people, mixed marriage people, and that it's ridiculous for anyone to say that they're racist or that they're white supremacists, because that's not what they're about. They're a cross-section of America. They represent all people, all political backgrounds. And he said that the first thing about the protests that are happening in Ferguson right now that he wanted the media to know was that Black Lives Matter. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
Well, it'd be amazing if it were true.
Yeah.
I mean, think of it. A bunch of white people with guns protecting us when we can't have guns ourselves. That'd be amazing.
It's cool.
But I still don't trust it. I have trust issues.
Yeah.
I'm a little scared too. But I mean, it would be amazing, wouldn't
it? It would be. You know, I'm listening to this.
I'd be like, a coalition of white dudes that are ex-military. They're
protecting
trained.
Black people.
And they're out there to protect Black people. And
with
they're gonna,
guns.
And they're going to assert those people's rights.
Mm-hmm.
Woo!
Yeah.
Would be great. I still don't trust it.
Yeah,
I'm
skeptical too, because I've read on white supremacist websites a lot of the same words that they aren't racist and all these things, and it's like
I know, but they clearly are. I haven't researched enough about the Oath Keepers. Maybe there's some background that I don't know about that clearly shows them to have a background that is not trustworthy.
Is it their oath is to the Constitution? Is that
That's
what
right.
it means?
Yeah.
Well, are they doing it in a more like non-biased way? Like, are they thinking of the Constitution as being built upon slavery and stuff and trying to change it for like what it should be used for, all the people, instead of just it was intended for white people?
The little I've seen of Oath Keepers does not talk about any of that stuff. It's mostly very patriotic.
See.
Constitutional. Yeah, I mean, this is the first time I've heard this group say we're protecting Black lives, we're protecting the Constitution, we defend the Constitution, and we're going to do that by protecting Black lives in this instance. Mm-hmm. And we want to say with regard to this protest in Ferguson, not that police need to be protected, not that the Black people are criminals and thugs that we need to protect businesses and community from, but that the first thing he said, this is a direct quote, the first thing I would say is Black Lives Matter. And the second thing I would say is that the Oath Keepers are there to protect your rights. We care about you, regardless of all the lies that the media and some other instigators have tried to propagate. Black lives matter. We care about you, we love you, and we are there to protect you.
I want to believe them.
I'm just asking. I want to know what people think. I want to hear from the public. Do you believe these guys? What do white people think? What do people of color think? You trust these guys? What do progressives out there think?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Leave us your messages. You can contact us at 701-566-0917. You can tweet us at media_PPP. You can email us at Cindy@kpppfm.com or Duke@kpppfm.com. You're listening to a podcast on Black Lives Still Matter.
Mm-hmm.
This is KPPP LPFM. We're on Live 365. Soon you'll be able to listen to us on the air at 88.1 FM, adding local color to your airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
And the next topic that I want to tell you about is this controversy. We started off with a song from Dre, Snoop Doggy Dog, Still was the song. And there was a lot of controversy about Straight Outta Compton, this movie, both the Black community as well as in the media. The first controversy, which I found kind of ridiculous, was how police were sent to the premieres of this movie in large cities to monitor the movements of Black people. What do you suppose that's about?
They sent police to the theaters to watch
They're
Black people watch?
They're afraid we're going to rise up or become animals, like Hulk ourselves out after we see this movie or something.
It's a movie premiere. Yeah. And I don't know if people have been paying attention to the news, but it has been white people that go to the movies
mm-hmm. and shoot them up and murder people.
Yeah.
We don't do that ever.
Like, people of color are not the ones going to the movie theaters and shoot. Why aren't they at the
Often as a sighting of Bigfoot that you'll see a person of color shooting up a movie theater. It's always a white guy who's got some issues with, like, you know, a woman like turned him down, or he doesn't like black people. Something crazy like that.
Like the guy that shot up that movie theater in Louisiana.
Yeah.
He was a woman hater, and he went to the premiere of Trainwrecked, right?
Oh, yeah.
Why weren't there police hanging out at all the movie theaters for the premiere of Trainwreck?
Exactly.
Why weren't there movie theaters swarming with police when they released Sniper, American Sniper?
Because mm-hmm. we don't inherently criminalize white people.
But here, straight out of Compton, there was even a report on Fox News about how, you know, they sent police out to surveil all of these black people going to the movies, and there was nothing that happened.
Even Fox News acknowledges.
They watched the movie.
They went and watched.
You know,
black people do nothing well, at movies.
It makes me wonder if this is the beginning of the pattern of law enforcement, just when there's more than a few black people together, a crowd of people of color, that they're going to be in there policing them in public places. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, that's always been going on. Black people have always been surveilled. It was illegal when black people were slaves. It was illegal for them to gather together in groups unless it was at church. And that is why it is so heinous what Dylann Roof did. Exactly. It's so heinous that we've had 7 or 8 black churches burned down mm-hmm. recently.
There's no sanctuary.
Because, no safe haven.
Because the only place black people were allowed to gather, mind you, they had to have a white person watching them when they did this gathering at their church. But they were allowed to gather for that and that alone. And black people have always been criminalized. People of color have always been criminalized when they gather in any kind of numbers. Look at that ridiculous story that we had in the news locally about the
Lick Squad.
The Lick Squad.
It's a local rap group.
A local rap group that held a concert that they were headlining at mm-hmm. that the police broke up, and they called it a near riot.
Mm-hmm.
The police called it a near riot, even though they admitted they didn't arrest anyone, that they were not threatened by anyone.
And they played it on the news night after night with this video of people out in the parking lot just kind of walking by the camera and police lights flashing and flashing and flashing.
And people dancing.
People dancing. And
aggressively.
And we heard some of the musicians, you know, they've been on the radio, they've been on different TV programs, and they're talking about what they did, and there was nothing threatening that they were doing. They went outside and started singing a song, stood on their own car, and the police were there ready to bust up this crowd that was basically leaving the show.
And they made it sound like they were damaging vehicles because they were jumping up and down on top of cars, but it was their own car.
Mm-hmm.
And they were singing the song they weren't allowed to sing inside.
Yeah, they got shut
down. To their audience that paid money. You know, that those people didn't get to see their show. And these kinds of things where the police over-police or raid or shut down events where Mexicans are playing a show, mm-hmm. where Mexicans are having a quinceañera, where black people are having a show, it's the same everywhere. So that if you have black folks in this country, in America, 2015,
mm-hmm.
you can't go to Straight Outta Compton without the police surveilling you.
Yeah.
You can't be protesting the lives being killed without police surveilling you. But, you know, white folks can still march around open carry guns.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's maybe why the Oath Keeper thing is such a, that Oath Keeper story seems like such a
farce.
An interesting fantasy.
Yes, there we go.
Because wouldn't it be cool if that was possible?
It's kind of like my wet dream, but at the same time, this can't be true. I don't see how.
It's a little scary to think that could be possibility that would be real, but you know, we can dream. Anyway, here's something though that we need to keep in mind about this movie, Straight Outta Compton. It's getting a lot of attention, and most of it has been, you know, positive in terms of how many people are going to see the movie, etc. Frankly, I heard the ratings weren't that great. But besides that, there is a discussion to be had about what the movie says. And I'm not going to comment specifically from my perspective. Instead, I'm going to talk about a Mike.com article on the sexism and NWA's history in the movie Straight Out of Compton and what supporting that movie means. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's some things about NWA that people of color are going to gravitate towards. We have to remember NWA wrote F the Police. Remember?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
we know the FBI had a huge backlash against that. This movie is, you know, it's kind of reminiscent of everything that black people have been having to fight all the way to the present moment with police brutality, with police misconduct, with the killing of black people by police. And that's where this whole, you know, group of rappers and musicians comes out of.
Mm-hmm.
Compton, the late 1980s, and that was where black people began to get attacked. It was right after Reagan, you know? Black Los Angeles at the time, everything was gangbanging, drug dealing. That was the social order in place in those impoverished black communities. And where this was occurring, there was also the brutalization by police departments on black bodies and plundering those communities, militarized violence increasing. And that all of this that came out of NWA, that came out of Compton, that came out of LA at the time, it echoes, you know, what was happening in Compton and Torrance and Detroit. It's echoing what's happening right now
mm-hmm.
in Ferguson, in Baltimore, in Cincinnati, in North Charleston, and a lot of other cities. It's the beginning of a Black Lives Matter movement,
yes.
if you will, in many ways. But here's what's disturbing. What we also know from the history of NWA is that black women don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Ice Cube puts his palm out and he sticks his hand on top of this black topless woman and shoves her, we're supposed to enjoy that. We're supposed to get, you know, some feeling that is positive from this behavior. And all of the half naked or nearly naked women that are there to perform for the crowd, for the people. These are the, you know, images, the way that the black women are portrayed by Straight Out of Compton. There was a casting sheet that was leaked, for example, in which, and this happened last summer, that said they wanted fine girls for this movie, okay? Fine girls who should be light-skinned with really nice bodies and medium to dark-skin-toned African-American girls who are poor and not in good shape.
Hmm.
Oh, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very misogynist.
It's gross.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what does that say about...
It's dehumanizing.
What does that speak to the say her name? How does the dehumanization, the sexualization of black women by these groups support the Black Lives Matter movement? It's a dichotomy. It's yeah. like you can't have the one without the other. That's why the Black Lives Matter movement is strongly coming out against this and saying that Black Lives Matter, which, by the way, was started by Black queer women.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot look to and seek liberation of Black people unless you are also seeking the liberation of Black trans people,
mm-hmm,
and Black women,
mm-hmm,
and Black homosexuals. And the list goes on and on. You have to include all the Black people,
yeah,
especially the most marginalized. In fact, those people that created this movement have to be at the forefront of the movement for it to matter. Because according to the misogyny of male dominance and male privilege and patriarchy, Black men like these, who are seen as icons of the Black Lives Matter movement and leadership, especially when it comes to music and hip hop, are not down with Black women's lives mattering. They don't care about Black women. And we can't forget that when we're looking at supporting a movie like this, because that's what we're supporting, the dehumanization of Black women. We can't also forget that in this era of Say Her Name and Bill Cosby being, you know, basically that's the end of the fall of the fail of Bill Cosby in the world.
Yeah.
We will no longer Bill Cosby in this world. He will not be seen anywhere because of what he means. Because of the dehumanization of women, the raping of women, the exploitation of women that he is now associated with. And that is what these folks are associated with too. Do not forget that Dre was involved in an incident in 91 where he grabbed Dee Barnes, a Black woman journalist, by the hair and slammed her head into a wall in a nightclub. And then later, in a Rolling Stone interview, he said that the witch with the bee, I'm not going to say the word.
Can't say that word.
Had it coming. That's what he said.
Wow.
Evil.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, all of the things that we associate with this misogyny, all of these Black leaders in hip hop and in attacking police aggression against Black men, they need to stand up for Black women too.
Yeah.
They can't forget the Black women.
Mm-hmm.
And we as people of color are paying attention to this movement. You can't forget the Black women that are leading the Black Lives Matter movement. It's not just Black Lives Matter. It is the weakest among that group have to be at the forefront. You have to continue to consider them the most important people to be talked about and saved, because it's not being done enough. We have to say their name. We have to care about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to leave you today with a Janelle Monáe song featuring Erykah Badu. This is KPPP LP FM. You're listening to Queen by Janelle Monáe.
It's hard to stop rebels that time travel, but we at the Time Council pride ourselves on doing just that. Welcome to the Living Museum, where legendary rebels from throughout history have been frozen in suspended animation. Here in this particular exhibit, you'll find members of Wonderland and their notorious leader, Janelle Monáe, along with her dangerous accomplice, Badoula Oblongata. Together, they launched Project Queen, a musical weapons program in the 21st century. Researchers are still deciphering the nature of this program and hunting the various freedom movements that Wonderland disguised as songs, emotion pictures, and works of art.